Hallo und herzlich willkommen, lieber Hörer. Das ist dein Daily of the Month. Der Aachener Podcast über Zusammenarbeit für agile Organisationen.
O podcast de Aachen sobre a cooperação de organizações que trabalham de uma maneira ágil ou que seguem um modelo ágil. Gosto mais dessa, certo?
So, here we are again. It's a snowy spring day in April. And, yeah, we're reflecting on being cold and trying to be warm inside.
Nice.
Well, I'm happy to be here with you both. It is the internal episode here, and today we'll be talking about humans at work and why do we even need emotions as humans and at work. So like always, I will try to make a bridge to our last episode, and we had a very lovely conversation with Jessica and Bastian from Mentoring Club, and the main topic was the power of altruism, and we saw some very beautiful things that were happening on their platform, people who wanted to just give their time to share and be connected with other people and be helpful and of service. And so one of the attendees try to get questions, not statements, that answer, not answers, but questions that guide me forth. So one of the questions that came after the episode was, well, what is the future of work going to look like? How potent, we could see by their example and with passion they spoke about this platform and how it was helping people, that potency that people wanted to give back and give service. So that idea of, what will the future of work look like kind of will be reflected in today's episode. We're doing an internal episode today because we were all really passionate about this topic of what it means to work together and showing up with passion and potency to accomplish certain things. And have found sometimes, I'll just speak for myself, but general, this is why the topic is here, is that we found in the past that we've had to wear masks and kind of show up on a very professional level, whatever, maybe we'll describe that or be able to pick that out apart during the episode, what it means to be professional, or to ask, to question what it is, what should it look like in the future? How does it look when we work together? Do we just want to be professional, or do we want to add some depth to that? So I'll call in my two cohorts here, Marcos and Chris. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi there.
Okay. Yeah. So we are also doing this in English as the last internal episode. We kind of reflected on similar issue of being authentic and what does it mean to be authentic, and wearing masks was definitely one of the topics that came up. I think that we were kind of very active in this episode to in our preparations because it was a topic that we were very interested in. So maybe I'll give kind of one of the frameworks of what we used. We were actually doing our own kind of research. We were asking questions to people we know about how they show up at work, if emotions are allowed, what is too much, is there bad ways that emotions can hurt relationships on a professional level. So those answers, those reflections that we received in conversations or our qualitative research for this episode will be reflected through some of our answers. So you guys, who would like to start?
I'm not sure if I want to start, but maybe just add in some co-information on our scientific research that we did. We talked to one friend who built up an IT startup in Berlin. And on my side, the other person was a Scrum Master from Aachen here that gave me some insight on this topic. Whom did you talk to, Joshua?
I spoke to an innovation manager. And I also spoke to a doctor anesthesiologist that works in the hospital.
Ah, and I just forgot I had a third person that might also play a bigger role in the distant future. We see about that, so we have something up our sleeves. I talked to a psychiatrist. So what about starting at the beginning?
Well, what's the beginning?
What does emotion mean, or where does it come from? What is emotion? I mean, this sounds like such a simple question, but I think it's not so easy to answer. What are there? Why are there in this world?
Well, I have a first question. Do you see a difference between emotions and feelings?
I would say it's very close, but I'm not sure.
Because that for me is, the answer to your question, well, what's an emotion? Well, that's what I feel. I can feel that in my body. I have thoughts. Mm-hmm. The thoughts I can't feel. I'm thinking something. The other one is mean to me or so. But a feeling, I'm hurt. Or I'm happy, that I can feel in my body. I think that's why it's called feeling and not thinking. In that sense, for me, emotion and feeling are, that's what how I sense the world, because I can only sense the world by feelings.
And why do we need it? Why can't we just operate on the brain rational level?
Because I think that certain things we can't analyze, but we can just feel. And like all the things we really need, we feel, and we don't analyze. I don't analyze that I'm hungry. I don't think and look at the clock and say, well, it's 12:30, so I'm hungry now. I can only listen to my body and say, okay, I think that's hunger.
But hunger is not an emotion, right? I mean, maybe if I'm really hungry, it could be hangry. Something else will come from me being hungry. Then maybe I'll be that will affect my mood, and that will then affect somehow also me on an emotional level, I guess. I think an emotion, it's an impulse that we receive. And often, though, I think that we do tie them. It's not like it's just a feeling. I think that we've tied our ideas with our emotions together to be able to first describe them, I think. I remember when I started, I don't even know, it was a few years ago, I just started to need to look online and just find a vocabulary to remind me exactly what are my emotions, what are my vocabulary that I use to explain or to describe the emotions that I'm having.
What emotion do you have right now? Trick question.
I'm a bit nervous still. I think we are kind of, I think we really tried to go really free flow with this episode. And so it's kind of moving out into the darkness. And also before each episode, I'm a little bit nervous. So we'll take time to work into it.
I can very much relate, Marcus.
One comment. I feel curious now how this ends. Joshua, you said something about triggers and your emotions. I think that this is in the first sense separate. There's a trigger, something happening, and then inside me that is resulting in an emotion and a feeling. Something is happening, I get angry about it, and you get upset about it, or you get sad, or you get tired or something, even if the same trigger happens from outside. And for me, this is not related to analysis, to thinking that happens. This kind of someone yells at me and I'm upset because of that. I'm not thinking, oh, this person is yelling at me and he shouldn't do that. And then I'm upset. I think it's vice versa.
Mm-hmm. I found a very nice input on this area coming from a guy called Ulrich Pontes. I don't know if he's famous yet. Maybe now he will be famous. But he dropped this line in a paper that I read from him, that emotions are evaluation system that really gives us a possibility to automatically assess a situation so we can react quickly and correctly, but without thinking, without really needing a lot of time. And maybe this also comes from a primal stage, so like the classics, saber-tooth tiger, you feel afraid and then you run. You don't think. So there's danger, I react, go.
Yes, and Marcus, I'll come back to you. I think that, yeah, it's a feeling or an impulse or a trigger, but through years of feeling that, then I start to name what that feeling is. And that helps me to also communicate what my emotions are, or what I'm feeling with others by naming kind of what that is. I think for me at first, it was kind of difficult to express myself in German because some of the expressions were not just like one-to-one, like dictionary definitions of each other. So it was kind of to understand also the context of how someone would describe being nervous, or I mean, nervous could also feel something, someone similar. My heart is beating really fast. Maybe I'm having trouble in my throat or something. But that could also be another kind of feeling as well, right? I mean, those are similar triggers or similar signs that I'm picking up inside of me.
Yeah, well, I think it's in this order. There is a trigger which triggers a feeling in you, which you then first have to realize that there's something going on inside you, that it made this trigger did something with you. And then being aware of that, and then being able to express that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, I really have to listen to myself. So what's going on with me? Is it that I'm sad? Is it then that I'm angry? What's going on? Then... yeah, noticing that and then being able to find words with that, about that, to express, okay, mm-hmm. what there was a trigger, this and this happened, and my reaction was that I got sad. And now I'm able to express that because I was aware of that. And I think we are not used to do that. We are not even used to express our feelings. When you ask someone, how do you feel? Oh, I feel good. Yeah, but there are much more expressions on what's going on in your body.
So it could be understood as some kind of sign coming from my body to my mind. Hey, wait up, brain. There's something going on. You should operate on that. And this sign is just internal. And expressing emotions is a possibility to let someone also see that signs. So he can also operate on that. And so you make a connection to the internal world of someone, so to speak.
Yeah, I like this picture that your body is telling you something. And that could be either, well, something is really good. Well, okay, pleasant feeling. Or mm-hmm. something is wrong out there.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that your brain even notices, oh, there's something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I think that what you're also saying, Marcus, is very important. And I think it ties really, I'll just bring in this term right now at the beginning, emotional intelligence. So Daniel Goleman came up in the middle of the 90s, he came up with this term called emotional intelligence. And I think it's based off like a four quadrant system. So his first quadrant is self-awareness. And he has, you know, part of the skills that are needed for self-awareness under that. The second would be my group awareness. And then there's the self-management.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the management of myself in the group situation. So I think that this awareness, this self-awareness is not just a given. It just doesn't happen. We have to notice mm-hmm. it and actually, yeah, give attention to there. So this is also a very important part of, yeah, for me, for myself to realize what is going on inside of me.
Mm-hmm. And this is not just some scientific storyline from Daniel Goleman. There are big corporates that are picking up this idea from him. I mean, there's this Search Inside Yourself program by Google, and this really dives into this complete thing to be self-aware and to know to learn how to better build up empathy. And this is something really quite astonishing number. Already other companies are adapting that program. For instance, that German IT big corporate SAP. And if you look at the story of SAP using the Search Inside Yourself program, there's this one guy, Peter Bostelmann. He's a SAP Global Mindfulness Practice Director. What a title. And in one of the articles, he speaks about a return on investment of 200% for the company by applying the techniques from this awareness program, you could say. So really, I mean, how is this possible? You have more employee engagement, you have sick leaves going down, etc., etc. And this has a huge impact also on business numbers. So it's not just some meditation, yoga, feel the rain thing, but it has really impact also on the business level. And maybe this could be now our path to maybe look to the business side of this topic, because I think until now we were very much at the human level and why it is something personal, but how are emotions treated in the business world? What is our observation here?
Well, in the beginning, Joshua, you were talking about masks. Now, in the pandemic, everyone is running around with masks, and I have this picture of two people standing in front of each other with a mask, not seeing the emotions of the other one. But then when I was thinking about our discussion today, I experienced it in companies that people always were wearing a mask in the company, not showing what's going inside, but showing what's expected from their role. And when the role says, well, you have to be productive, you have to be professional, and professional is you don't show emotions, then people don't do that. Did you also experience that before?
I have personally, yes, I've felt that before. I think that in myself, I felt like actually switching, you know, a switch inside myself. Like I show up at work and now I'm professional Joshua and I, you know, I am here to do business and to get a job done. And that disconnects me from a certain part of myself so that I can, I don't know, I guess, I don't know if that's what I've just seen. And that's, I mean, I've worked in definitely in a craftsman background with a lot of kind of masculine energy with kind of, Handwerk. So working with my hands. And so that was kind of, you didn't really show emotions at some level, you know, and to show that you are actually, I think it was maybe a feeling to show that I'm good, then I just show like a certain aspect of me. I show a professionalism. I show just a certain way to speak. And maybe another part of me is not invited into that role or that being.
Yeah, I think I experience similar things and could really relate to a description that I took from a TED talk. Yeah, I can say I had some time for input, but there was this really nice TED talk, Stephanie Metrano. I will also link that in the show notes. And she spoke about we typically have these two words. There's the private world and there's the business world. And every day we are transitioning from one world to another. And in the passage, we like switch ourselves or we have different clothes or different behavior. It's somehow separated. And this is also sometimes my feeling that on work you have to be very different, to be very apart from your private person. And I mean, there are these classical sentences that I guess most of you heard before. Don't take it personally. And I think, hey, I'm a person. How should I not take it personally? I'm not a robot or just a calculator machine. I am a person. And I'm asking myself honestly, why do we need this this big border, this Berlin wall separating our private and professional life? But because I think doing that has some flaws. So how do you see that?
Well, I'm thinking about how our industrial life came into existence, and I'm thinking of Taylorism, this theory how work can be productive, and I'm thinking of the conveyor belts of Henry Ford, where it was separated between the people which do the work and people which plan the work, and then the people which do the work, they were just told what to do. So when you're at the conveyor belt, you have to tighten some certain screws. And why should there be an individual human being? Why should there be some emotion at this work? It's not efficient. Someone who's just coming to work and doing the same thing from morning to evening, that's what's expected. And I think that's where it comes from, this kind of that the human being shouldn't be in the a hindrance of the smooth process of functioning machines.
But now we have machines for that, right?
Yeah, and I think that's why things change at the moment. Well, at the moment. Yeah. But
well, I think that I go back to kind of like our talk with Mark Lamberts, and we were talking about complexity, and one of the things that we see that come out of complexity, so that is the term entanglement. So it's like we are all entangled together in so many different connections. And it's the idea of linear causality is can happen in a complicated machine setting world, but in complexity where everything is kind of meshed together and entangled. So that means that if everything's in context, so if things move, they have that has I'm striving for the word here. It sends waves out into the system, and those waves are felt. You know, it's not like if I get a flat tire on my car that it just affects me. It affects the whole line of cars that are behind me, maybe the kids that are sitting in the car with me. I mean, so there's like a chain of reactions that happen from everything. So I think that one thing that what COVID has showed us with being in home office and not is that these boundaries are almost non-existent anymore of work self and home self or personal self. It becomes difficult to separate them. If I'm sitting in one room and I'm having a meeting and a child walks in, it was like before, I think it would be like a faux pas, and now it's like normal business.
But can I take you back a bit? You said something like we now have this complex world or this complex task ahead, and I think you were referring to my question that the old way of doing this mechanical robot work doesn't fit to these problems. Or did I misunderstood? And I would like to see what concretely is a problem in the old, let's say, unemotional way of co-working.
Okay. So I'll give an
what is the problem with that?
So I guess maybe if I have a sick child, before I can get to work, if I am going to, I need to figure out where the child can be for the day. And maybe I have also a big project that is due on that day or the next few days that people are depending on my part of the work to get this project done. I mean, so the entanglement that I'm talking about, the complexity is that, yes, of course, this experience of my sick child, it's a logistics kind of problem. It's a worry problem as a parent. Are they going to be okay? There's also worries. What needs to happen that they will get better in the next few days? But it's also how am I good with my team? How can we help my duty to finish this project? So there's this kind of if I'm just going to show up and check out. That part that I have a sick child, there's something that gets left behind, or maybe when that's just expected that I check that out. I think that's very difficult. Maybe that doesn't make for the best, healthiest place for me to be in.
I think there are two aspects in what you're saying now. I want to look a little bit at this private and work life. It's completely right that you have some things you carry with you, like your sick child, where your mind is busy with something else, which also happened when you look at Henry Ford. That was also an issue at the conveyor belt. You wouldn't be able to operate properly. I think what comes in addition is that also at work, you have feelings, emotions, which are triggered by work, which you don't carry from your private life, but which you get, the triggers come from your environment. And I think the first glimpse of that we saw in the lean concept of Toyota, of their production system, where they suddenly said, well, every worker can stop the conveyor belt, because when a worker can see the a problem, then this affects everyone. So it's not that the worker should stop the conveyor belt when he has a sick child and can't work properly, but when he can, when he sees there's something wrong in the process here. And I think in the at an example of conveyor belt, you might still analyze that. Oh, I see that a car is dropping down, so I better stop. But I think at the our complex problems are now that this pushing of the button of the people at work should come from their awareness of what's going on. What's wrong here? There's a problem, because I get a trigger. I get a problem. I'm aware of that. I see, I feel something. There's something wrong. Mm-hmm. So I push the button and say, well, I have this feeling there's something. I'm upset now because this process is not working. It has an effect on me.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a strong point you're saying, that I'm so aware of my feeling condition, and that I react on that in my work as well. When I talked to the psychiatrist, we talked sometime about a very special profession. We talked about flight staff. And so there's also this term for pilots, because they have to do a really focused job. And if there's any kind of obstacle, it could be life-threatening, and they have to be up at their game. They have to be fit to fly, as they name it. And so they have this point into their way of working to ask themselves to be aware, am I really fit to fly today? And like I was told, also the flight staff that has to do the emotional work, you know, the nice men and ladies that give out the soft drinks and so on, they always have to put on a smile, even if their kid is sick or whatever. But they also, they have some baggage that they take to work every day. And it's more easy to share this, to get around, or to say, oh, you know what, I have a sick child today. I'm very worried. I will try to make the best on my shift. But just to let you know, and the others can really have a better view, how are our people resources doing, because they need every man. They have to judge how is the team doing. And like I was told, the persons in that profession are maybe due to that reason very open, also with people that they just met the other day, because normally the teams are switched every day. So you normally don't meet the person the next day that you worked with yesterday. And even though you have a really strong bond and are very open also on an emotional level, like I was told, that I found very, very interesting.
I like the picture of this pilot checking whether he's fit to fly. And I want to enhance this picture of, well, he didn't sleep the night before, he was having a party and he's tired. That might be one reason, but another reason might be that he's not cooperating well with the co-pilot. That he's sitting there, he's fit, he's fine, but he just sees the collaboration with the co-pilot is not working. He can't trust his bond to the co-pilot. When he is in an emergency situation, he wouldn't see that his connection with the co-pilot would be trustworthy to say, well, I trust on the co-pilot that that this is working. So then would be, for me, another reason why the pilot would say, well, I have a certain feeling here. I'm worried. Mm. And I express this worry because when I'm not fit to fly, because I'm worried that this constellation with the co-pilot is not really working properly. We can't handle an emergency situation. Then the pilot should say, well, fine, let's switch the team. Let's do some teamwork or some team building, or let's switch the partners that I can trust in my, that I have a trust in the in that collaboration. I think that is why we need feelings at work.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe one. Joshua?
I would just like to add something, to that, Marcus. I think that maybe it seems totally logical when it's an emergency situation. but maybe in other contexts, if I think a lot of times maybe people don't feel that they are able to say, I'm not feeling like this. Or when somebody says, how are you today? And I have all this stuff that's going on, I still just say, good, oh, everything's fine, and go on with maybe that. I don't know if that helps train us to maybe ignore those feelings. It's, it has an opposite kind of effect. I just push them aside because I think that I am, nobody wants to hear me complain or, you know, I don't know, for many different reasons, but maybe I start to ignore my feelings and those impulses and what they're trying to tell me.
And I think this is very stressful. And if you have a job where you need your full brain capacity, so to say, if you're very much under pressure with holding up your facade and keeping your professional face and holding back your emotions, your capacity goes down. And that is another flaw that you get if you suppress emotions at work, I think.
Yeah, and I think we are missing out a lot of opportunities because when I'm in a work context and I have this kind of, I'm disappointed because something is not working as I hoped it would work. And I'm really disappointed about that. And when I would tell, I'm disappointed that this project is going on like this and this, when that can't be heard, then we're missing out the opportunity to improve something. When everyone says, well, fine, well, that's how it is, and what shall we do? Things won't change.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, you know, comes back to Amy Edmondson and her term, emotional safety, or psychological safety, excuse me. And I mean, this was made famous also in the Aristotle study by Google. Which, by the way, I've looked for this article online and I've never found the actual article published. It's kind of a phantom article, but everybody will write about it. But they said in teams, the teams that were performing the best were the ones where they felt that it was an open place to share their feelings or share their discomforts or share their failures. And so I think that just this kind of result when I reflect on myself, when I'm in a setting where I feel that I can ask questions that maybe would seem really basic and maybe I would sound dumb if I asked that question, I should be this guy and I should already know this. When I start to question that and not, risk. Maybe sometimes I would not go to places to explain what maybe it went wrong or where a failure had been because I don't want to appear to be not competent. In those situations, I think we do lose out on opportunities to learn from each other. And I think that is when that. I mean, I think it has been proven then that when there is psychological safety, that when people feel that they can open up and share or ask questions, that they the team becomes this learning organization.
I think that in our organizations we often have something like competition that we can't really point out problems or failures or feelings because we are ranked, we are rated. according to the productivity and according to the results. So when I'm sensing or something impacts me in a negative way, I don't have the solution. So I can't tell the answer. I can only tell, well, this is what I'm feeling. Then obviously I'm not productive in the first hand. I'm not really giving a solution, but we are rated according to the solutions we produce.
Yeah, and I think we have a misbalance. I mean, there's accepted emotions and non-accepted emotions, and something like vulnerable, showing yourself vulnerable, that's really something that's not commonly accepted. It should be. And I think when you talked about Amy Edmondson, there's another lady that's very, she's researching vulnerability. I have a pretty funny quote from her. I just read it out. I'm sorry if I now sound a bit like a roboter, but here's the site. I just told 500 people that I became a researcher to avoid vulnerability. And when being vulnerability emerged from my data as absolutely essential to wholehearted living, I told these 500 people that I had a breakdown. It's really nice. Also a nice TED talk from her. I will definitely put this in the show notes as well. Vulnerability is one, I think, often not accepted emotion that we should rethink from my point of view. The other thing, other emotion would be anger. That's mostly you can't be angry and you have to tame yourself. But anger, if you use it focused, could be something, a really good ingredient for change or innovation, to show emotions. To have the energy to break some rules. Markus?
I have a question about the anger, because I wonder why it's such an unwanted feeling. I myself, I had a lot of learning to do to deal with anger of other people. And I wondered, well, what's the issue? And I think the problem is that when we are angry, we tend to react in a certain way. Some people go into attack of others, mm-hmm. or some people withdraw. So they're angry, mm-hmm. and they are just shutting off what your reptile brain is telling you when you're under attack. And I think that is then not easy to handle, because then mm-hmm. obviously you're upset, you're angry. You're not in a state of discussing or being productive or something like that. And then it's about, well, how do we deal with that? How do we deal with that? And do we take the effort to work on that? And the question of, how do I react when I'm angry? Am I throwing with toys like a kid? And you often see that with grown-ups, that when they're angry, they just throw with something. Maybe not literally, but with words. Or do we have a culture where I see that you're angry, but I can catch you and I can work with that?
Mm-hmm. That's a perfect time to bring in some of the inputs that I had from the Scrum Master. When I ask for emotions that are not okay at work, we suddenly start talking about emotion, but she started to talk about an action, about attacking someone. And this was very interesting, that you ask about emotions and you hear about actions. And it took a while to go back to what was the emotion behind this, because I think the emotion is okay, but how to handle the emotion, that's really the corner where we have to talk about also the fence, yeah, the borders of being emotional. I mean, no one wants people going around being just emotional, throwing things around, attacking people, swearing and cursing. And if you criticize them, they can just say, oh, yeah, well, you know, I'm just being emotional. I'm being human. I was told by the guys in the podcast it's the best way to do it. And I don't think that this is really our intention. So to say it loud, clear, I don't want to be just out of line.
Well, I think that, yeah, I think that that's one of the other things that we would have to be aware of is also power asymmetries. So especially when somebody else, so like one of my managers is getting really mad and yelling, it might be more difficult for myself or others to kind of step in and try to calm them down or to be able to say something that would calm them down or try to engage them in conversation or tell them they're being like a kid. I don't know. I think that... so that is one of the awarenesses, and I think that when we look at the emotional intelligence, this four quadrants, it's kind of it's the awareness of how the emotion is there. It's the feeling, and how, like you just said, Chris, is how we enact that. How do we show? How do we let it? Sometimes we could say hijack our system. But it's not only just about how we would deal with it ourselves, but also how do we deal with it with other people, I guess, especially with maybe mm-hmm. negative, we would say maybe negative or maybe anger or maybe sadness, I think might be also.
Mm-hmm. I like your picture of hijacking the scene. I think that's what people are afraid of. I think in the company and in private. Like I'm angry and then I'm hijacking the scene by doing whatever of aggressive things. But I think that is how I'm used to my environment is reacting to my anger. I think a kid is throwing with its toys because it learned that when it's angry, no one listens to the kid. So it needs something to change something. So what do? You do something physical. And I think when we go in a company at work and react like that, when we are used to, okay, I'm angry, so I have no chance here in this company to express my actual feeling, well, then I'm reacting in some strange way. But when there is a culture of, well, we talked about empathy, of tuning into the feeling of the other. When I see you are angry, and then I go to you to find out, well, what calms you down? How can we find out what made you angry? How can we change that? That would be then you learning, well, you don't have to throw toys here, but you can be angry and that's productive. And I think that makes the difference.
Well, we are the picture painters here, but... this I also took from one of the talks that I heard, that emotions are often, they have an image like a dragon, you know, it seems really dangerous and fearful and like a force of nature. But for the Game of Thrones fans, there's a possibility to tame the dragons and to bring them on the good side.
I think
so much for metaphors.
Well, let's stay with the dragon. Where's the dragon? When you get angry, where's the dragon? The dragon is in my head. That for me, this is a dragon, what you're doing. Due to my experience, my learning, I know when someone is angry, I can't talk to that person. There's no chance and end of the story. But that's in my head. Mm-hmm. So the dragon is not you being angry. The dragon is mm-hmm. what I do with you being angry.
So if we would now, I'm not sure if this is really the thing that we want to that we want to preach here, but if we want to make up a mind game about being more human at work, showing more emotions, take up the mask. What would be a good advice to be aware of boundaries?
Well, what do you mean by boundaries? What's allowed or not, or what?
Yeah, in a way, what signal, where does it become too much emotion? Can there be too much emotion? I would say yes, yeah, no, but that's just me. And, I have kids.
And how shall that work? I'm allowed to be a bit angry, but when my anger goes on over a certain level, I have to be aware of that and then stop it. Or what shall I do with it?
I don't know. I don't think that there's some global threshold for anger, but there could be something. I mean, that's maybe a matter of awareness, or it's just the action that I'm taking due to my emotions. Mm-hmm. If I start to hurt someone, to hurt their emotions or whatever, then it's too far. So I would try to explain it in that way. Because there are always boundaries where a system breaks. That's my belief. But I'm that old Marshall McLuhan fanboy. And so I know every good system has one extent where it breaks. So like car is a nice idea from coming to from A to B. But if we have too many cars, yeah, then we have a traffic jam and it breaks. And then we don't come anywhere.
Yeah, aren't we now talking about regulating behavior and not emotions? So
sounds logic. Oh no, logic. Beware.
And then it's, what's the consequence? And for me, it's still this kind of, how do we react as a group, and not how do I try to make a mask on, put a mask on myself.
I mean, I would try to go the path of saying, how can I best focus or tame the reactions that I take as a consequence of my emotions. Pooh. So now it's very, very meta. Joshua, help us out. Bring something tangible in the discussion. I'm free falling here.
What do you feel now?
So yes,
I'm a bit lost.
I think that maybe I'll bring it back for a second. I think that one of the aspects that I really enjoyed from a conversation that we had about a year ago with Andreas Wittler, we came up with the idea of rudiments, and they're kind of like practices that help us to kind of hone our skills. So if we were to say, I keep coming back because I like this term. I think it's very good, but emotional intelligence is kind of a skill. It's not just like IQ where I'm either smart or I'm not smart, or, you know, it's something that we can train, especially when it has to do with my awareness of myself, my awareness of my environment. So, what I would say is partly as my, and knowing that things are entangled, that when I react or explode or break down or open up, that there will be reaction. And so if I was to think about rudiment, how would I know? Let's just make it easy. I guess that one of the things that I've been liking to do in the last year that I've really been doing well is when I show up for a meeting, it's kind of like a daily, but it's actually an actual check-in. And it starts with, this is how I'm actually doing right now. These are a few things that are really affecting me right now. Not just, this is what states, this is what I'm doing today for my work. This is like a few of the things that are going on inside of me. And that would just be bringing that in as kind of a new daily. as a practice to kind of get the group to tune into themselves, to be aware of how the other person is doing right now, how I am being, to think about how they are doing as well. And this takes a certain degree of vulnerability to open up to something, to say something. And some people might be able to go there or be more vulnerable in certain situations or want to share more than other people. I think Brené Brown says something very interesting, though. She says it's always people can, I don't know, leaders or anybody can win over somebody because people like to see people get vulnerable. But being vulnerable myself is really difficult because it doesn't feel really good, you know, because it could feel when you're open, you're not protected. So if we're talking about humans at work, then I think one of the practices or a rudiment that I say that would to maybe define a new human at work would be a new kind of daily. That would be the first impulse.
Yeah, for me, the rudiments are, so the things I can practice is first being aware of myself and looking at, well, what triggers which feeling and how do I deal with that? Also looking, well, then being able to choose my reaction. There's a certain trigger and how do I react? I have a choice. Might not work always, but I can be aware of that. That's the first rudiment, looking at myself. And then the second rudiment would be empathy, walking in the shoes of the others. And that is for me on an emotional level, because I can only experience the other one through emotions. Because when I experience myself via emotions, I can only really understand the other one, well, when I can connect to the emotions of the other one. So it actually helps me when the other one shows emotion, because then I can connect. I can have empathy. And I think that are the two rudiments for me in this matter.
I have another thought that I took from the psychiatrist talk. sounds like I had some breakdown. Maybe.
Well, we can deal with that. That's okay.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, she told me about we should try to integrate the inner with the outer. And so like a flight attendant could be coming to work and saying, you know what, I'm coming out of a miserable situation. I'm just breaking up with my boyfriend whatsoever. But anyhow, I'm here and I will try to do the best service that I can. So let's go. So to combine everything to, yes, still do your job, be a good sport, be a good sparring partner and provide a great service, but be aware and show that you have something going on in the background. And one other thing I liked very much.
Just a question. You said which is going on the background. What's with the foreground? So now you talked about a situation. Well, that was the sick child thing, right? But what's with the situation when you have that situation at work, due to work? Do you think it's the same? Show your emotions, or is there a difference?
It could be. It could be. It could be, for example, be a great way of resolving conflict. Because normally when you have conflict with someone, the people come in this battle situation and someone shoots and the other one shoots back. But if you try another strategy and just tell the other person your vulnerability and that this led to emotion of anxiety or whatever, this typically can help. I mean, there's still some assholes in the world, so it doesn't work for everyone, but mostly, I would say, so it's my hypothesis, but I would say that this could lead to a reaction that the other doesn't keeps on shooting, but might calm down, because the concept behind that is that you remind someone of the fact that he's dealing with a human and not with a roboter, There's a human with feelings that are hurt right now. And maybe this can help him to see, okay, we're now, this is not productive anymore. We should go back and, withdraw the guns. Last thing I wanted to say about integration, and then I give the mic to you, Joshua. That was a pretty nice thing. My interview partner said we should we can try to combine thinking, feeling, and acting. And these are the components that we talked about the whole episode now. So what am I thinking? What am I feeling? And how am I acting on that? And then I can reconsider the situation. Back to you.
I just would turn the order a little bit, because for me the feeling comes first.
Oh yeah,
because that is
works for me.
That is there's a trigger coming in, whatever. That just triggers a reaction in my body in form of a feeling, and then when I'm aware of that, then I can start thinking.
I think there could be different combinations, but works also for me.
So I would like to introduce just another, I guess, I don't know if it would be a rudiment, but it would just be a new definition or a new perspective to add that, I mean, we talk about the number one skills for tomorrow's workers or for today's workers are creativity and this gives a picture for me that is not, if I'm professional or only professional, I am, or a cog in a Tayloristic system, you know, I'm serving one function and it's kind of a very surface function. But I know that in knowledge work, which is mostly the work that we were starting to move into, that it's our relationships that help support actually our access to innovation, to new ideas, to that we, this collective intelligence is kind of a new term, or maybe not a new term, but it's being used a lot because we find that it's not just flowing from me, it's coming when I'm sharing ideas, and it's not always the quantity of my network or the people that I know, but also the quality. So if I'm going into deeper relationship or revealing, if we think of the ice, the iceberg, then we start to see the depth that goes into the ocean. And maybe this is where we start to access the deeper relationships. It will also give us more rewarding work atmosphere. But also, I think if we will access things like creativity that make for better solutions, right?
I think that this term creativity is pretty much linked to emotions and feelings, because when you want to create something new, you can't analyze that, because when you analyze that, you have something you can combine from the past or whatever, but then it's an analytic process. But that's not creative. And I think in our complex world, we are more intuition, more non-analytic solving of the problems. Because when you just analyze, you can just look at what's there. But I think we as humans, we are much more capable in connecting with each other and being creative by come up with new things. And for me, that is an intuitive and an emotional process. And I think when it just came to my mind when you said professional, is it really that professional means non-emotional or non-human, but just facts and productivity? What's productive? I think we have to redefine the term professional, that one professional skill is emotional empathy and emotional competence. Only then you can be really professional. Otherwise, you're just Tayloristic.
Yeah, I mean, if you look into this professional cliche, yeah, I mean, different people can have different thoughts on what is professional. But I think commonly when I think of this term, and that was also a part of one of the things that I looked through one of the TED Talks. that was kind of funny. She described the perfect employee of the month. And she had terms like he's assertive, detached, audacious, charismatic, autonomous, cold-blooded, self-confident, result-oriented, performance control, influencing his teams, high tolerance to stress. To make it short, emotional, detached, and always under control. And this, that was the next slide, forms like the perfect picture of someone who would probably call a psychopath. And yeah, that's not really what we need for our work. I mean, that was very taken up to the how do you say?
Extreme.
Yeah, over exaggerated. But yeah, there's some truth behind this, I think. That's maybe not the thing that we need for the future. It's my point of view. Oh, my telephone is just ringing. Wait, do you hear that?
No. Oh, that is the daily of the end telephone.
Schwupp. Hier ist der Daily Werbeblock. Keine Panik, wir wollen kein Geld. Was wir wollen, sind deine Gedanken zur Folge. Schreib uns einfach eine Mail an post@dailyofthemonth.de. Damit hilfst du nicht nur uns weiter, auch du wirst künftig viel besser schlafen. Versprochen.
Keine Ahnung, wie das passiert ist.
Und weiter geht's nach der Werbepause.
Ja.
So I look at the clock and we are kind of moving quite deep into our conversation. I guess I will kind of take over the leadership role here to close it up and maybe moderate the end. So I would like to ask you guys both, this topic was both for both of you was very important. We wanted to do an internal episode for that we could all talk about it. Is there, Chris or Marcus, do you each have something that you would like to share to kind of close up that maybe you'd like to express or to share with the listener or the listeners?
Well, for me, this is some kind of a core subject of the entire agile way of working, to think about exactly how we act as a human. Because I think when the Agile Manifesto was written, it was about trust and respect. That was the core motivation of the guys coming up with the manifesto to change something. And for me, we are here at the core base. It's not about some algorithms or some technical skills, but it's about how we can sustainably work as a human in an organization. And that is for me the core aspect of agile ways of working. And I think there we really have to have competences to deal with each other, to be able to see each other as humans, because otherwise I think this entire concept of agile ways of working will only be at the surface.
Maybe also adding to your words, Marcus, I think, or I was thinking of the episode with Richard and Björn about UX and dev teams. And there we had this notion of that many companies, departments applying agile methods just reduces on this onto this shorter time to market and being more effective. And forget about these core aspects that you just called out, Marcus. And this is one of the aspects that are also where I think there could be done more. They are more in the shadows of the agile practical work, as I observe it sometimes. Last thing that I wanted to show at the horizon, maybe. I learned a lot about these other professions. So I had also conversations with doctors and talking about emotional workers like the flight crew, etc. We now didn't have the time to go more deeply into that, but I took so much interesting thoughts from there and so much insight that I see an episode coming, and maybe there will be also another pilot in the cockpit. Let's keep it by that.
Okay. I guess I would just add my part. I think that I'm very happy to sit here with you guys and discuss that. Discuss kind of painting a new picture of what a human at work looks like. I think, Chris, the picture that you created for the cover here for the episode is just it's really cool. I think that picture will leave a lot of impression. You know, it's like, what face is happening underneath that mask, or what's happening underneath that mask? And I guess that's part of the mystery. Yeah, is to maybe as I work in collaboration with you guys and other collaboration partners to be curious, to wonder what is going on inside with them in situations where of difficulty, and also kind of self-awareness of sometimes we snapped our fingers and the expression just came out, but it's actually not that easy all the time to be aware or in every situation to see what's going on within ourselves. So I think that those are kind of challenges that each of one of us can take with us, because also the darker sides of what those emotions can bring up. So I'm happy that we can be share this with the world, and hopefully it will open up conversations and questions for other people. So, Chris, would you like to end that?
Yeah, I mean, my ending would be to ask you, Joshua, about the next episode, so that we have a little preview. So that would be my outro. What's up? What's up next?
Okay.
What's on the horizon?
For May, we will be talking about sense making and decision making. So in this complex world, how are we making sense with, if we say VUCA world, in unsure, in times of uncertainty and in complexity where we don't have that linear causality, how do we make sense, and then how do we decide on what to do? We have a couple guests from Berlin, special guests that will be helping us on this journey. And that's our bleak for May. So looking forward to that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And there will be a return of Andreas. Is that already clear?
We're still in discussion, but I'm pretty sure it will happen. So,
okay, great. Okay, Return of the Jedi. Great. Okay, guys, it was a blast to talk with you again, and it was joyful and also struggling for me, I can say. And now I'm relieved. I'm also very exhausted. Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Yeah.
Talk to you.
All right.
Adios.
Bye-bye.
So fühlt sich das
gerade an. Ich weiß nicht, ob ich einfach zu wenig gegessen habe oder so, aber boah.